Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Day Beautiful. I'm Adam Vitkavage, and this is a podcast where I interview a debut author about their reading and writing history, what inspires them, their debut book from Genesis to editing it, and from querying agents to finally selling it. If you like what you hear here, check us out on daybeautiful.net and follow us on social media at daybeautiful. Today's guest is a Brooklyn-based writer and editor and is also a graduate of the MFA program at the New School. She has received fellowships from McDowell, the Center for Fiction, and elsewhere. Her stories, essays, and reviews appear in or are forthcoming in Granta, the Los Angeles Review of Books, The Baffler, the New York Times Book Review, and Jewish Current. Her debut novel, Worry, is out now. Please welcome Alexandra Tanner. Hey, Alexandra. I just read your official bio, but I'm curious, what is your unofficial bio? Who is the writer behind Worry?
Oh my gosh. that's my day in and day out is who am I? I don't know. I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. I have really built my life around writing. It is something that I'm realizing about myself. I don't know.
No, that's fair.
It's an amazing idea to start a podcast by asking someone, who are you for real?
Yeah.
Because and what then, more impossible question is there? And yeah. I'm very, you know, willing to go galaxy brain on that and be like, no one's anyone.
No, that is fair. I am going to dive into this idea of like you built mm-hmm. your life around being a writer.
Yeah.
Because I feel for the past 5 years, I've kind of built my life around Day Beautiful. It's mm-hmm. a side project. I don't get paid for it. I don't accept mm-hmm. advertisements. And it's kind of become my personality. And I don't know if that's good or bad, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of an example, but it's like, you know, when you see someone who's like Wes Anderson is their entire personality.
Yeah, right? You clock it right away.
Is that me? And is that you? Like, you are a writer through and through. Is that right. Is that good or bad? Who knows?
Do you have an answer?
Yeah.
I was about to say, like, I think I'm someone who, like, there was a time when, like, Wes Anderson was my personality.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I don't know, the interesting thing about, like, there is something about the process of writing and publishing a book where you are constantly thinking about who am I in relief against this material and against sort of the machine of an industry. And it makes you sort of look at your life in phases and I feel like I'm a different person every 6 months.
Yeah. I get really intense hobbies. Like mm-hmm. I go all in once I find
what's your hobby right now?
Currently it's been Dungeons and Dragons for about like a year and a half. I never was into it, or maybe 2 years
fun.
Now. And I got into it and I play in numerous mm-hmm. tables and like I watch YouTube.
Oh my God.
So things like that.
Yeah.
But before that it was, I'm not going to get into it, but like mm-hmm. playing online Survivor. I won't get into that weirdness, but that was like, that's what I did during the pandemic. Anyway.
Yeah.
What's your current phase? And maybe the last
phase.
One. Yeah. Who are you? What's going on in your life?
What's going on in my life? Kind of this. It's really all consuming. Mm-hmm. What else am I doing? I watch a lot of television. I read a lot. I'm really into jigsaw puzzles. I'm very deep about jigsaw puzzles.
Very cool.
I think they're a really great metaphor for life.
Yeah.
You can't figure it out. You walk away, you forget about it. You come back and you can see everything very clearly.
Yeah, and one piece is missing or broken or your cat ate it.
You dropped it, you vacuumed it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in this phase, in the worry phase. Mm-hmm. Not that you're worried, your book title, and we'll get to
I'm
it.
I'm always worried, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. but I've alluded to this on many interviews, but now I think this is the one that we're going to dive into it. Your book's coming out. It's like a month. It's 40 days away from when we're recording this, just to give people a picture. 40-ish mm-hmm. days, right? What is your day-to-day? I am an author. I have to do podcasts. I have to write essays and listicles.
Yeah.
What is your day looking like? How much of this is consuming you?
I mean, I'm doing like it feels like I have 3 or 4 jobs right now. I have a day job. I work in academic publishing for a small company in North Carolina, and I'm working for them 9 to 5. And I'm writing essays in my spare time at nights, and I'm doing interviews and podcasts and talking to great people on my lunch break. And I'm like working on new projects and writing new stuff for myself. So if I you're coming, you're finding me in this sort of like mushy state where my life really is work, work, work in some form every day. And that's unusual for me because I guess maybe my the first thing I had the impulse to say when you said, "What's your official bio?" is like, I'm a lazy person. I like to sleep. I like to snack. I like to stay in my robe until 3 p.m. and watch cartoons. Like I love leisure time, and I haven't had too much of that lately. Like Sunday was the first day that I kind of vegged out and did nothing in a really long time. So I don't know. It's a fun time. It's a really fun time. It's a really exciting time. It's really cool to be thinking about your work all day, every day. That hasn't happened to me before in my career. So,
Do you feel you're using different parts of your brain, of your body, of your soul that you've never used before? 'Cause like when you're writing and you're creative, like that's creativity, but is this like this is a job? This is like the business side
This
of
does,
things.
yeah, this does increasingly feel like a job, and it feels like I don't know. Part of me is cynical about it, and part of me is like step back from that cynicism a little bit and like look at the beauty of life is in anticipation, right? There's never like a moment that you arrive at. And so I'm trying to really internalize that and be like, these moments where I'm saying the same 5 things about the book and you know, thinking like I heard Lydia Conklin at Brooklyn Book Festival last year, I think, 2022, maybe say something amazing, which is like when you're promoting your book, you're an employee of your former self. And hearing them say that, I thought it was just like, I like logged it away. I was like, I'm gonna have to think about this in a year. So it is kind of, it's not creative. It's almost like, this is going to sound so corny, but it's like care work for your previous self. Like the you who was creating something on like a dream and a prayer, now you have to take care of that person and speak for that former version of yourself.
Is there a version of yourself in the past who could not have done this, who could not have done the business side and then self-care for your former self? Like, did you, or do you, if you feel like you released this 2, 3 years ago, were you ready to do all this?
No, but I don't necessarily feel ready to do it now. I think you just have to meet whatever moment you're at. And already, like, you know, you start a new job, you start a new hobby, there's a learning curve. You make a lot of mistakes and you don't know what you don't know. So that's sort of what I'm finding about this process is like I'm learning every day from the mistakes I'm making and like from the things I'm forgetting to say in an interview and from the thing that I'm, you know, having like not having the foresight to have reached out to someone, you know, whatever it is, I'm trying to have a lot of grace with myself about it, even though I guess bottom line, no, I don't feel ready, but I'm doing it.
And you're doing all this because of your book, Worry, which is will be out by the time this podcast is out. What is worry from your perspective? No, cutting through the publicity, what people like me think it's about. What is worry in your own words?
Worry to me is, I mean, the cool thing about worry is the way that I'm talking about it from a publicity point of view, I don't feel like I'm compromising that much. It's this weird existentialist novel about two people who are kind of trapped together, two sisters who are trapped together. And there's really no plot, and there's the motivating factor is the dynamic between them. And there are these sort of little episodic trials that they go through together. And it sort of ends with them still in the lurch about who are we to each other? You know, we're siblings. Are we really friends? Do we really like each other? Are we going to show up for each other? And leaving these questions unanswered. So it feels very fun that I set out to write this book with like no real plot movement, no real answers, and I'm getting to talk about it that way.
Yeah, I think anyone who has listened to Day Beautiful, which I don't know, could be two people, who knows? And anyone who knows
a lot of
me
people
knows.
Are listening to
no,
Day
yeah,
Beautiful.
Yeah. But anyone who knows me, the way you described your book, I think it's gonna be no secret that Worry is one of my favorite books of the year.
Oh, thank you.
It is.
It's
vibes.
A big year for books. It's a
too
big
many
year
books.
For books,
it's,
man.
Yeah, there are a lot of great books, but Worry hit me like everything I've ever wanted in a book, and everything I've always wanted in like a film, and maybe not have gotten that often. You know, like the vibes, just I'm here, I'm feeling it. I've often talked about my sister in our 20s. We lived together for 4 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my
and
God.
Like, and
That's
we
a long
weren't
time.
Friends. She's 4 years older than me, so we weren't in high school, weren't in college together. She got married young, got divorced, and then we became friends in our 20s. We're like,
oh my God. That's the plot of Worry.
So yeah, so it's like I felt it. And you saying you Wes Anderson was a personality, as was it for me, or like not a personality, but like a hobby. A hobby or whatever. And I feel like we're kindred spirits in a lot of ways, and Worry hits it. And I guess
I'm so glad.
Yeah. Oh, so good. All I care about are vibes. Like people are like, what's the plot? I was like, I don't even remember the plot of like the Batman movie I saw. It just it felt like this.
It's not about that. It's about Colin Farrell. So it's vibes.
But with Worry, you said you're happy that you're able to talk about it the way you are. Why did you set out to write it? What was the reason that Worry came into the world?
I had written like a novel in grad school, as one does,
as you do.
And as you do. And I think when you're writing a novel in that environment, you want to be the best in your workshop, or you want to be the deepest. You want to be the one who's synthesizing all the influences that are coming your way and making something that's sort of a perfect object. And I think when those things are what's guiding the writing, it's not real. It's not true. And so I was sitting with this manuscript that was the first thing I had written, but it wasn't really me. And I wanted to write something that was just for me and just for, you know, the three people in my life who were going to read it. And so I think that's what's the amazing thing to me is when you sort of like let go and forget about having some idea of what a successful literary project like looks like, or what's a book that the market is going to like. That's when you're writing something authentic. That's when you're writing something that's going to do something for you. So it was partly just wanting to write a book that only talked about the things I was interested in: family, existentialism, Judaism, the internet, pets, all those different things. And Worry wound up being the vehicle for it. I had lived with my sibling for several months, years before I started writing it. And I was just thinking about that time. And I remembered it being really fun, but it had actually been like a really difficult, torturous period where my sibling and I were not getting along. So that just seemed like enough of an engine that I could write about all these disparate things.
And was it easy, or how did you feel when you were like, oh, these are just scenes and vibes, and maybe there is no plot? I put that in quotes for people who can't see us. Were you comfortable with that, or did you fight having to do that when you were writing?
Having to have a plot?
Did you feel you needed a plot, or were you like, I'm good with just like the vibe?
So what's interesting is My recollection of it is that I wrote the book in this really fragmentary style. And then once it was finished, sort of retrofitted not a plot, but sort of smaller plots, looking at these fragmentary sections and being like, okay, how do I group these into chapters? How do I, Seinfeld and Curb were a big inspiration while I was writing it. So I was sort of thinking like, in Seinfeld, there's always a payoff at the end. This little joke from the first 5 minutes becomes the zinger in the last 5 seconds. So I'm not necessarily trying to like mimic that, but trying to at least have some sense of circularity. So it was easier to just get it all out and not worry about a plot and then see, oh, where is the plot that I've sort of unconsciously been, seeding in from the beginning.
When did you, because it was fragmented, when did you know you were writing a novel as opposed to what writing whatever?
I wrote it like as a short story first. I had like whatever the first chapter was a short story, and I just had more. I just had more material. So I was in a writing group and I wanted to write a novel, and I was like, okay, this is going to be the thing that I'm going to turn into something full length.
Going back to your the idea of writing at an MFA and the novel that you wrote or attempted to write, you alluded to this of why it kind of didn't work, maybe, but why didn't it work? You said it like writing in that space is kind of not the most authentic space 100% of the time. But was there things you still needed to learn about how to write and how you wanted to write?
I think it's so long ago. I'm trying to like remember the things I was bumping up against. It just felt like I was writing something that felt like work. It felt like so much work to try to, it was a third person novel that had three main characters and it sort of rotated between their points of view. And that was so exhausting. And trying to attach a plot to it was so exhausting. And I think I thought that when you were writing something that felt really challenging and was really draining, that that meant that you were like about to strike gold, instead of being like, no, when you're writing something, when you're using material to its greatest effect, it's not going to feel like this huge, laborious thing that you just can't fit together.
I am not a writer. I've talked about this. I just like to talk to writers. I like to promote your work. So that's why I just like to ask these maybe not dumb questions, but questions I feel
No,
young
not dumb.
emerging writers. Yeah, I agree, not dumb, but I feel like these are the questions where it's like I just mentioned this on a podcast that's not out yet. It will be out with Philip B. Williams about a lot of us want to be writers or directors or screenwriters when we're young, and we write our little stories, and then it's hard, and like you quit, or you find another Dungeons and Dragons hobby, or you start a podcast. And it's the idea of like,
Dungeons and Dragons is writing, by the way.
oh yeah, I call it collaborative storytelling. That's a whole
Yeah,
nother.
it
I want to
is.
have a whole nother podcast series about writers who
I'm
play
just
Dungeons and
really into,
Dragons.
I'm a big Dan Harmon fan, and I listen to Harmontown, and I watched his little Dungeons and Dragons like half animated show. That's my reference point.
100%. But I guess where I'm going with that is, I don't know where I was going with that. I always like to talk about your childhoods. When did you want to write and what did you read? What were you into this or did it come later in life?
No, I was always very into books, very into writing. I was talking to my partner about this the other night. I was like, I've been in it. I was in poetry club in second grade. There were two people in poetry club, and I was one of them. I mean, I was a big reader. I'm trying to think of what I read. I was just talking about this recently. The Avi books about the little mice, Poppy, Ragweed. I loved those. I loved Margaret Wise Brown. She's still one of my I love her books so much. I don't know. I loved all
Yeah.
those books that you read in elementary school. Jacob Have I
100%.
Loved, Island of the Blue Dolphins, Hatchet. Like,
Yeah.
I love all the
Yeah.
classics for kids.
100%.
Yeah, I was always a reader.
And then I feel we're similar in age, and we won't get into it, but media came of, I feel like media shifted completely as I grew up, right? Like it just became something else.
Absolutely.
But it really influenced like my personality, what I dress, you know, like what were some standout, like we joked about Wes Anderson, but what were some standout like pieces of media where that it affected you or influenced you a lot? Like I remember like Dane Cook, which is like a bad reference, but like when Dane Cook came out when I was like a freshman in high school, that was like a personality for a group of us, for better or worse.
I listened to Dane Cook my freshman year of high school as well. Of course, everyone did. I
Yeah.
think that's sort of what's funny about media from that time of your life is things weren't as diffuse. So it did really feel like everyone was listening to the one Dane Cook album that was out or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a piece of media that I was very into theater growing up. I was
Okay.
like I did theater all through middle school and high school, and into college I was studying playwriting. So I think,
Okay.
like, don't know, discovering Sarah Rule was really big for me in high school. I read her plays for the first time when I was maybe 15 or 16, and that was when I was like, oh, I want to do this, I want to replicate this. Yeah, I was big into Sondheim. Sondheim's musicals are still big for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and your publicity copy references Frances Ha, and I think Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach specifically. I think after I got over Wes Anderson, I haven't. God, he's coming up a lot in this podcast. Maybe it's because I saw Frances Ha and I started thinking about like how I got to like the films I like now. Frances Ha is one of them where I feel like it's being talked about now because of
I think
Greta,
so
but it was
too.
forgotten for a little bit and it shouldn't have been.
It's
So
well, because it's such a simple, I rewatched it maybe 4 months ago, 5 months ago for the first time in years. And it's very quiet. It's very, I understand why we chose it as a worry comp, because it is just like this circular relationship between two people, Frances and her friend.
Yeah.
And I think something about bringing it all back to Wes Anderson, but just something about the intimacy of stories about family or siblings or friendships, and letting that drive of all the sort of pomp and circumstance around it. I think those movies are big for me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if I've shared this publicly, not that I'm a public figure, but Wes Anderson. I'll tell this story very briefly because maybe you have a similar one. Royal Tenenbaums came out when I was in 7th grade, 2001. And a few friends of mine, it was like summer, we were going to see a movie, and I was like, oh, let's go see this. I thought it was like a comedy and or whatever. I don't know. I was 7 or I was in 7th grade. But they're like, oh, let's sneak into Not Another Teen Movie. Because we, you know, and I was like, cool, you all do that. I'm gonna go, I watched this movie by myself, like while they see
So
that. And
funny.
that's when I
That's
like was
such an
like,
origin story.
yeah, and like that's I think explains exactly who Adam Vicanovich is as a person and like the divergence I had compared to like them now. But do you have like an origin story where, I mean, we've alluded to a lot of things, but now that I shared my story, I'm curious. Yeah.
I know that I must somewhere in the recesses of my memory.
It's okay
An
if you don't.
origins, yeah, I don't think I do. I mean,
Yeah.
I was,
It was Avi. It was
was
it was
Avi. It was, yeah. But I think more, I think it was plays. I think it
Yeah.
was Sarah Rule. It was
Yeah.
reading Brecht, in high school, and thinking about, externalizing feelings in a big way, that I think that's the media that kind of got me at that age, like in high school, and continued to throughout college. Maybe I was seeing The Social Network, actually. I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
I was rewatching it with a friend a couple of weeks ago. And there was just something about like riding in a car full of, you know, friends from high school, friends from college, to see it and to like that sort of, to me, is the last, like, that's experience we were talking about of like everyone seeing the same thing at the same moment and having a big reaction to it.
Yeah, because that was what, a biopic, an indie thriller, courtroom drama, all like, and so many other things all in one. God, what a good movie.
It's so good. And it's, again, it's like, it's just this courtroom drama about Mark Zuckerberg and Eduardo Saverin, and the way that they just like amp up the need they have for each other, and the way that's dramatized. Very impactful, very big.
Yeah. We talked a lot about media. I feel like I should talk a little bit more about Worry, but not the plot. I don't talk about plot or characters even.
Not just that, like, there's a plot to talk about.
Exactly. You understand the vibes.
Yeah.
But I am curious, a vibey, plot less adjacent sibling story. We opened with like talking about the business side of things. How was it finding an agent, or were you agented before this book? Did you get agent with this book? I guess let's talk about the timeline of your career.
Yeah, I was writing this book knowing that I wanted to do something with it. At a certain point, I realized, okay, I want to try to publish this. And Monica Woods, who's my agent, is one of my closest friends. And I sent it to her and I was like, can we do this together? Like, what do you think? And that was a scary moment. It's scary to send writing to a friend. And it's scary to send writing to someone who you hope is going to represent your work.
Yeah.
So it was that anxiety of both. I hope my friend really likes this book, and I hope my friend who's so good at their job wants to help me.
Yeah.
So once I had a draft of the book, I sent it to her and we worked on it for a while. I want to say I finished it in like spring 21, and we went out with it beginning of summer 2022.
Definitely. You know, that makes sense. Monica is your agent. I 100% knew that going into this podcast, and it fell out of my brain, because my question was going to be like, was it hard finding an agent who understood what you were doing? But knowing it's Monica, who I've talked about on this podcast, because her list of writers are like some of my favorites,
legendary.
That makes sense. So my follow-up question, I don't have. Because like a lot of her clients fall into a great umbrella of books like yours, not one for one comparisons, but it's like, oh, I see what's happening. I feel this way when I read these books.
She's so good, and she's so great at, I think her list is really non-traditional in a lot of ways, and she's very passionate about finding space for stories that aren't traditional big publishing books that a big house might have trouble envisioning, and sort of doing the editorial work and packaging it in such a way that it becomes irresistible. And that's really cool to watch someone do that for your work.
Yeah. And after you worked on it with her for a while and started, you know, trying to sell it, what was that process like? Did people get it?
A couple people got it. I mean, in the end, I think my editor, Emily at Scribner, she's the person who got it, you know. It was not like a big, ferocious, seven-way auction, feeding frenzy kind of thing. It was like, I really locked in with someone. And Scribner had just, they were putting out Big Swiss, which I think, like, thank God for Big Swiss. It's such an incredible book. And it's my hope that, I think Worry mirrors that in a lot of ways. So I think they were primed for it, and Emily just saw, like, she got the humor. She's been hiding tiny babies around the Scribner office in homage to, like, there's a part in the book where someone's hiding tiny babies around a high school, like little plastic figurines. She's just so in it, and she's been so great.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I love to hear about like the relationship between agent, editor, and writer. And for the most part, it's always good-ish, like how, or at least people are not, they're willing to not share certain things, or they don't share certain things. But yeah, what I guess, and this is maybe not a question that's even answerable, but what made like Emily getting it? What did she get? Like, how am I trying to phrase this? Yeah, like, what was the clicking moment of we got it?
She just saw it at the way I saw the book in my head is this like big prism through which so much was reflected, that it wasn't a book about sisters and it wasn't a book about the internet. It was a book about the compounding experience of your 20s. And she saw it as this like bright, hyperactive object, which was how I had always seen it in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, I think it is the novel for a lot of us, like everyone in our age range-ish adjacent will find themselves in it, which I don't think there's been books that have done it and have come close. So I think yours, and this is just when I'm complimenting you awkwardly. I just feel like it is it,
Love to
man.
be
I feel like worry
complimented.
is it. That's all I want to get out. I love it so much.
I think that's, you mentioned like what advice do emerging writers need to hear, or like someone who listens to this podcast to sort of like hear truth from writers. And I think that's really the only that's the big lesson I learned of this book is like, don't know, just put it all in something that you believe in.
Yeah.
Like you can have a non-traditional plot, you can have unlikable characters, whatever that means. You can have a
Yeah.
really weird, confusing ending. You can get away with it all as long as you're really just pouring the breadth of your experience into something.
Yeah.
People will get it. There will be something for everyone, even if it's super specific.
What have you been enjoying recently that you could recommend that you have been vibing with?
That I have been vibing with. I've been in like a pretty, I think I'm coming out of it, but I was in a pretty serious reading slump for most of last year. What did I just read? I read Marie-Helene Bertino's Beautyland, another like incredible novel that's so specific, about a particular experience of growing up in a particular setting that just achieves the universal through specificity and through faith in a character. Highly recommend that. I'm reading Kylie Reid's Come and Get It right now. So funny. She's so good at capturing how people talk. That to me is like the big, I think because I come from this like theater-y playwriting background, that like when you can capture that, that's the thing I admire most. I just read Blake Butler's memoir, Molly, the book of our life, I think. I mean, an incredible project about grief and ownership of a story about a life. And then I read Molly Brodack's memoir Bandit right after to sort of stay with her a little bit longer.
Yeah,
Those
so
are my big
many
ones lately.
great books. Yes. Holy. Yeah, I'm gonna have to Blake's memoir was not on my radar. Pre-ordering now.
Yeah, gotta get it.
Yeah, fabulous. What about since we talked a lot about movies and you mentioned you just like to veg out and do TV, what have you been binging? Or I don't like to say binge, what have you been
I know
marathoning?
there's something so gross to me about
Yeah. Yeah, I say
binging,
marathon.
but
It's like
yeah,
a
marathon.
it's a skill to be able to watch that many shows in
I
one
think
sitting.
what's kind of amazing about the phenomenon of binge watching is every once in a while a show will be like billed as bingeable when it's really just like an 8-hour movie. And so the idea that like we're finding that we have the attention span to sit through an 8-hour movie is wonderful. I just watched Mr. and Mrs. Smith
Oh
which
yeah.
everyone, and like half the people that I told I just watched it, they're like, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, like the movie. And I'm
Yeah.
like, yeah, it's like the movie. That's the IP, but it's funny
Completely,
and
yeah.
sweet and it's great. And it like it just I'm a Donald Glover fan. I love
Yeah.
him. And I think it just like pushes the boundaries of like what you can do with two people on screen.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a lot about this, how like shows that are even about one or two people, they sort of round themselves out. And this was a show that kind of refused to do that. That like every episode there's someone who intrudes on their lives.
Yeah.
So I found that really, really cool from like a, I don't know, character point of view. What
Yeah.
else am I watching? I don't know. Nothing other than that super remarkable lately. I'm rewatching a lot of sitcoms to like relax.
Yeah.
Community.
Donald Glover.
30 Rock. Donald
Donald
Glover,
Glover.
exactly. Can't get enough of him.
Thank you so much to Alexandra Tanner for coming on the Day Beautiful podcast and discussing her debut novel, Worry, which is out now. Get it at your local favorite independent bookstore. You can find her on the internet at alexandratanner.com, on Instagram at alexandratanner, and on Twitter at alex____tanner. You can find me, Adam, at fitcabbage on all social media. You can check out Day Beautiful at daybeautiful.net and follow us on social media at Day Beautiful. And as always, I'm Adam, this is Day Beautiful, and you're all beautiful.